August 1793. A serving girl collapses while making breakfast. By afternoon, she's dead. Within weeks, bodies pile in the streets of Philadelphia, and a 14-year-old girl named Matilda Cook watches her entire world disintegrate. This isn't dystopian fiction. It's American history. Yellow fever killed 1 in 10 Philadelphians that summer, transforming the nation's capital into a ghost town where church bells tolled endlessly and neighbors fled from neighbors. Through Matilda's eyes, we experience not just an epidemic, but a profound meditation on what it means to lose everything and somehow find the strength to rebuild. Before death arrived, Matilda lived a typical teenager's life, resenting her mother's scolding, daydreaming during coffeehouse chores, stealing glances at Nathaniel, the painter's apprentice. Her world consisted of the family coffeehouse on High Street, her stern widowed mother, her beloved grandfather, the Revolutionary War veteran, and Eliza, their free black cook whose skills kept the business thriving. Matilda yearned for escape, remembering Blanchard's yellow balloon rising from Walnut Street Prison, a symbol of the freedom she craved. The coffeehouse embodied her contradictions. While she complained about endless cleaning and serving, she possessed a natural talent for business, dreaming of expansion. Philadelphia buzzed with possibility: ships on the Delaware, debates at the State House, merchants conducting business over coffee. Then Polly died. Their serving girl simply didn't arrive one morning. By evening, she was gone. Mother's cold response, "She was our servant, not a friend," revealed both the era's class divisions and the emotional walls grief had built around her heart. The fever entered quietly, whispers among businessmen about deadly miasma from rotting coffee at the wharf. Some dismissed it as medical fear-mongering. Others remembered the outbreak 30 years prior. Market vendors whispered about sick sailors. Mothers hurried children past houses marked with yellow flags. Then the death toll exploded, 64 in a week, over 100 the next. Church bells created an endless dirge. Matilda worked relentlessly, her hands raw from taking over Polly's duties. The city divided sharply. Wealthy families streamed out in carriages, while servants, shopkeepers, and laborers watched them go. Disaster reveals society's deepest inequalities. Medical debates raged with life or death consequences. Dr. Benjamin Rush advocated bleeding patients of up to 2/3 of their blood and administering mercury. French doctors recommended rest, fluids, and cool compresses, the approach that actually worked. Families faced impossible choices between competing treatments, never knowing which doctor's advice would save or doom their loved ones. Abstract horror became devastatingly personal when Mother collapsed in the street, discovered by a cart collecting the sick. Former neighbors hurried past with averted eyes. Shopkeepers barred doors. Fear transformed community into isolated individuals focused solely on survival. Yellow fever's progression is mercilessly cruel. First come shivers despite August heat, then yellow-tinged eyes and jaundiced skin. In delirium, Mother called for Matilda's father, revealing wounds beneath her stern composure. Then came the dreaded black vomit, blood and fluid signaling advanced infection, stripping away dignity and reducing even the most proper individuals to desperate circumstances. Their frantic attempts to save Mother highlighted the era's medical limitations. Hot pepper baths, mustard poultices, bleeding to balance the humors, and harsh purgatives, remedies that likely weakened patients further. Yet the crisis revealed something unexpected. "Go," Mother begged through delirium, willing to face death alone rather than risk her daughter's life. The woman who demanded perfect obedience now demonstrated love's ultimate sacrifice, transforming their relationship forever. The journey out of Philadelphia became a nightmare when grandfather showed fever symptoms. Armed men from Pembroke refused them entry, and the farmer transporting them abandoned them on the roadside, even lying about when he'd pick them up to save himself. Fear transforms ordinary people into cruel strangers. Left stranded, Grandfather's military bearing crumbled. When he said they must form battle plans, but waited for her decision, Matilda realized with terror that he now looked to her for guidance. His response, "Whatever you say, Captain," marked the moment their roles reversed. Matilda's desperate resourcefulness emerged, finding water by following willows, discovering raspberry bushes, attempting to catch fish using her petticoat as an improvised net. When thieves attacked their abandoned shelter, Grandfather died defending it. His final words, "Strong, beautiful, clever, my sweet Maddie, love you," passed the torch of family leadership to her. His death marked the end of Matilda's childhood, forcing complete transformation into independence. She was utterly alone. After Grandfather's death, Matilda wandered Philadelphia's apocalyptic landscape. Abandoned markets rotting, rats prowling freely, over 3,000 dead and 20,000 fled. When an elderly woman violently attacked her with a cane, screaming disease accusations, it revealed how thoroughly fever had corroded human connections. This was her absolute nadir. Then she discovered little Nell beside her dead mother. The child, no more than 4, represented both overwhelming responsibility and precious hope. Taking on her care seemed impossible when Matilda could barely feed herself. Yet this act of compassion gave her vital reason to persist. "I picked up the child and cradled her close, an instinctive gesture defying the atmosphere of fear and self-preservation." Reunion with Eliza provided both practical rescue and emotional resolution. Eliza took them to her brother Joseph's home, creating an improvised family that deliberately crossed racial boundaries rare in 1793 Philadelphia. When Joseph's twin sons and Nell fell ill, Matilda moved the sick children to the coffee house, reclaiming her home while creating space for healing. She hauled endless buckets of cold water until her hands blistered, refusing to surrender. When she collapsed in the garden, she woke to frost covering the ground. The epidemic had ended. The frost brought more than epidemic's end. It signaled Matilda's transition to adulthood. "I am Matilda Cook," she declared, "not destined for a scullery maid's life. I will set my own course." Mother's return created joy and role reversal. Once formidable, she now appeared frail and gray-haired from a second fever attack. Matilda must become caretaker while determining their economic future. When Joseph suggested selling the coffee house, Matilda responded boldly, "I'm not selling. I'm going to open for business tomorrow." Her proposal to make Eliza her partner challenged racial hierarchies. Mother Smith insisted they formalize it legally, acknowledging social barriers while showing their determination to transcend them. The final scene shows Matilda's new morning ritual, solitary reflection with coffee before the household wakes. These quiet moments let her acknowledge lingering ghosts while embracing responsibilities to the living. As the yellow sun rises, filled with prayers and hopes and promise, Matilda stands and shakes the idleness from my skirts. Matilda's story, rooted in the real 1793 epidemic that killed 5,000 Philadelphians, offers no easy answers. The Free African Society members who nursed the sick, Dr. Rush treating 120 patients daily, Mayor Clarkson refusing to abandon his city. These weren't superheroes, but ordinary people who chose courage when fear would have been easier. Sometimes the only way forward is to stand up, shake the idleness from our skirts, and rebuild from the ashes with whatever strength remains.